Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski, co-host Dr. Carl here.
Yo-ho-ing.
Today we're going to be talking about cortisol, what it is, what it does. We've talked about adrenal fatigue in the past. We've talked about secondary causes of obesity and got into it a little bit. But we're still seeing more trends of people talking about like, hey, maybe you shouldn't do high-intensity exercise simply due to the increases which are normal in cortisol acutely, meaning at that time, not chronically elevated, like elevated all the time. So increases just short term from like exercise and other little things that, of course, these Instagrammers, TikTokers, apparently threaders and other people are talking about. So let's get into it. My brother's the greatest endocrinologist on the planet. So he's going to talk to us a little bit about cortisol.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, it's amazing how, I mean, I think, you know, we've been hearing people talk about, oh my God, I'm stressed. My cortisol levels are causing all my problems since before we knew understood what cortisol was, as I recall correctly. So, so what the heck is cortisol? So technically cortisol is actually a steroid hormone that's synthesized from cholesterol in one of the layers of our adrenal cortex. And we can talk about some of those later. But when I talk to patients about the simplicity of it, so our adrenal glands, these little bitty guys that sit by our kidneys, have these three layers that make some of the very, very important hormones that include cortisol, our main blood pressure hormone, aldosterone. And then they also make some androgens, the so-called sort of stereotypical guy type hormones that we can talk about. And I describe this as kind of our stress hormone. That's what people think of it as. It's our stress hormone, but it does so many things. It's very important for that whole system to work right. And it's important to have enough, and it's important not to have too much. The cortisol is important for blood pressure. It's important for regulating our blood sugars. It has some activity to do with our body's metabolism, which is probably maybe why it gets some sort of discussion on social media, I guess. But it also has a very big role in immune function. So it's our body's natural anti-inflammatory hormone. So people are familiar with what we call NSAIDs, like ibuprofen or Motrin and Naprosyn or Aleve and some of these types of medications that are called non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. Well, cortisol is literally our body's steroidal anti-inflammatory. And once upon a time, back in the day at Mayo Clinic, they're the ones that discovered the role of giving people high doses of cortisol. And now we have all sorts of different types of steroids that we give to people for inflammatory disorders. And this was a big deal. Because it's very, very good at treating inflammation. However, it also has lots of side effects. So the most common cause of the disease of Cushing's syndrome that we'll talk about at some point is actually medication-induced too much cortisol from medications, prednisone, hydrocortisone, dexamethasone, some of these other ones that people are familiar with. So yeah, how does it work? So our hypothalamus, the little control center in the middle of our brain that communicates to our pituitary, it stimulates the pituitary gland to make, it's called adrenocorticotropic hormone. I just tell patients, it's basically our adrenal stimulating hormone. And then that goes down to our adrenal glands, again, the little guys behind our kidneys, and it promotes cortisol secretion. What's that? The little,
or gals.
Did you say guys or gals, our adrenal glands? Yeah, yeah. Little guys or gals, whatever, that are down there.
Not a guy girl thing.
Right. Whatever. By the way, I tend to use guys sort of for all genders and gender fluidity.
Yeah, but don't you know Maui from on Moana when he's like, men and women. No, not a guy girl thing. You know, he's like, all
yeah, people, that's all yeah. People. I'm about like that guy. All yeah, people. So. So anyways, and so, yeah, so ACTH is what we call it. That's the adrenocorticotropic or cortisol stimulating hormone. It secretes it. And it's in a what we call a diurnal rhythm. So really our normal cortisol should essentially peak as we're waking up. So it's kind of a one of our wakeful hormones. We joke around about, oh, I got woken up suddenly, my cortisol went through the roof. There's some truth to that, right? So you kind of feel maybe a little buzzed, wired, you know, a little bit. It increases alertness, et cetera. And then it drops throughout the day and has little fluctuations throughout the day with meals and levels of stress. But it should be down to essentially zero when we go to sleep and go to bed. And we use this type of normal physiological pattern to help us figure out if someone actually has cortisol disease. So that's kind of the basics of it. But what the heck are people talking about out there? What are people saying about cortisol? Why is everyone blaming everything on cortisol?
Why?
You're the social media expert.
Yeah, I mean, what the hell's going on? What they're saying is they're simplifying it as a fat-storing hormone, and that, like, the reason people have a lot of abdominal obesity, they call it belly fat, of course. Mm-hmm. They're saying the reason people have that is because they're have high cortisol levels from just being stressed all the time.
Yeah. And so we know, one of the things we always talk about, we say, hey, we got to work on nutrition, exercise, sleep. So sleep's a big deal, and stress reduction. And then I always tell patients, I wish I had a better magic wand for reducing your stress, because there is something to it, but it's not cortisol's fault. You know what I mean? Like it's a very important hormone when you're stressed out. For people who have adrenal insufficiency, who I see, we have to make sure that they take extra amounts of their medicine, their cortisol replacement therapy, during times of stress, or their bodies will shut down on them. So there's a little truth. We have to reduce stress levels. We have to make sure we have good sleep. We have to have good quality nutrition, exercise for our wellness and our weight. Because if we have a pituitary tumor or an adrenal tumor, or if we give people too much medical steroids, it does redistribute our adipose tissue where we don't want it, in our abdomen. It does induce insulin resistance. It's kind of an extreme version of what is kind of happening in any given person with insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes. So it absolutely does do that. And of course, the high amounts, they increase our blood sugars. I was just telling you a story about a patient of mine who has an adrenal tumor making too much cortisol, and we could not get her sugars to get into a safe range for the life of us with every medication we could that includes the best thing we have, and that's Mounjaro. Plus, she was on a ton of insulin until we gave her a special cortisol blocking medication called mifepristone. We're going to maybe have another episode on some of these real disease states, but
the average person walking around,
no.
The average person walking around with some stress. This was the big thing back when I was in med school. There was a guy, this Charles Poliquin, would do these body fat caliper skin pinching tests all over the body, and he would say, based on this, you have too much estrogen, too much cortisol, mm-hmm. or whatever yeah. else.
Straight
and,
quack.
And so, yeah, and so then they would recommend supplements like phosphatidyl serine and a few other things to basically modulate or lower their cortisol.
Oh, God.
And this is the big thing. You see it with people talking about, like, hey, if you're going through menopause, we had our menopause episode. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a few more of those. But if you're going through menopause, your cortisol levels are already high. If you do high intensity interval training, that's going to be a big time stressor. It's going to raise your cortisol levels. It's going to make it actually harder to lose fat.
And who's the person that says that? And everyone thinks she's some genius.
I don't know. There's a bunch of people.
I don't know if I want to drop a name if it's not the right one, but
no, I don't. I see so many people saying that. There's a few of those menopause influencers that just, like,
you know. So with exercise, I mean, the bottom line is that chronic intense exercise is associated with a sort of normal physiologic elevated cortisol level. Okay, so whatever that means, that can be a problem if people are constantly overtraining, but it's not a disease of cortisol. It's the underlying root issue is just excessive overtraining. So that's a true thing. Anorexia, so anorexia nervosa, people who are not getting enough caloric intake and they are losing weight all across the board to a degree that's potentially very significant for their disease state, that causes a state of physiologically elevated cortisol. So we endocrinologists and all doctors who might screen for this, we have to be careful about when we're screening for excess cortisol in these people. Other sort of non-tumor related states of elevated cortisol, we used to call it pseudo Cushing's. So they actually could have some signs of too much cortisol. This happens in pregnancy. It actually does happen in a lot of people who are struggling with obesity and diabetes. So they just have higher levels. And sometimes it has to do with, we can talk about the active and inactivation of it with enzymes. But like I said, anorexia, so severely underweight, other types of disordered eating. Really, you know, here's an interesting one for all those people who love fasting. So really long periods of fasting actually, you know, kind of you can tell that from the caloric intake issue, actually elevate cortisol levels chronically. Excessive alcohol use chronically is a cause of physiologically elevated cortisol levels. So there are a lot of kind of normal physiology causes of elevated cortisol levels, but that doesn't mean that the cortisol is bad. It's these are chronic inflammatory states, and it's a good thing. It means your system's working right. It in itself is not a problem. So you don't ever want to take a medicine or even a supplement, because who knows what the heck those supplements do. If they play some sort of role, that means they're a medicine. You don't want to take something that reduces your cortisol without an endocrinologist helping you with it. Depression, I think major depression, you know, can be associated with elevated cortisol.
Well, that's kind of the chicken or the egg thing. That's what a lot of the, you know, adrenal fatigue went into more of that HPA axis dysfunction. And so a lot of people are saying, well, look, if you look at their cortisol, it's high. It's because right. They have HPA axis dysfunction, SSRIs. It's not really the serotonin. They actually help modulate their HPA axis. It's really hard to figure out the chicken or the egg there. But
it's the cortisol itself isn't a disease process. If you have a pituitary tumor making too much ACTH or an adrenal tumor making too much cortisol, that is a problem. And that's going to cause problems. And we're going to evaluate it and deal with it. But in all those other situations, we want to treat the root issue. You know, all the holistic integrative functional quacks say, oh, we got to treat the root issue. And they always say cortisol and thyroid when they're not actually treating the root issue. That's part of the problem. The root issue might be like chronic alcoholism or
what they're gonna say is that the SSRIs are gonna help with the sensitivity of the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis. It's a whole. I mean, trust me, I've gone down the rabbit holes of what these people are trying to say. They come up. It's like the little conspiracy theory meme where the guy's pointing at all these different things trying to make it. But it's, you know, this is very similar to the whole CGM. Discussion where just monitoring blood glucose excursions after a meal and how like it got to the point where, and people didn't believe me. There are people saying don't do high intensity interval training the same way for cortisol because they notice blood sugar increases. Yeah.
That's so normal. It's not normal physiology.
Yeah. So cortisol increasing after exercise is normal. That's literally what's supposed to happen.
So in like I said, in chronic exercise, chronic overtraining, undereating, all that stuff can cause some physiologic stable hypercortisolism. Yeah, probably not good, but also not the root issue. Higher intensity, longer duration exercise results in significant cortisol elevations. That's not bad. That's normal. And we know that high intensity, long duration exercise is generally really good for people. Strength training. We're the docs who lift. We're shills for strength training. It acutely increases cortisol along with a little bit of growth hormone and testosterone. That's normal. That's appropriate. That's what our bodies need. It has been studied to evaluate, you know, like actually checking cortisol. I looked into this for the exercise folks for overtraining syndrome, but it turned out to not be helpful because it's not the issue and it's not perfectly correlated anyways. And actually, exercise can help reduce the cortisol that's somewhat supraphysiologic, but still physiologic in major depressive disorder. So we want to make sure that people with depression are getting their exercise in. Maybe that's one of the helpful benefits.
Let's go over some of the testing things. So I actually just did a nighttime salivary cortisol a couple weeks ago. Mine was undetectable.
Completely unindicated. You're lucky it wasn't a false positive. I would have given you so much shit.
No, you told me to get it back when I started getting my bone density issue.
Yeah, that's because you probably had Cushing's back then.
I just wanted to make sure.
You look Cushing.
I did the 24-hour urine cortisol, or I did a dexamethasone suppression test.
Yeah.
But so okay, so here's what's going to happen. You're going to go get one of these tests. You're going to go to one of these, like there's a new company out there called Function. It's pushed by Mark Hyman.
Oh,
you're
going to
get a battery of tests. Oh. This is what's going to happen. There's people listening. They should hear this. They're going to do a morning fasting cortisol. That morning fasting cortisol, and we talked about this before, is really for ruling out adrenal insufficiency.
Mm-hmm. It helps, and it's not perfect either, by the way.
It's not made for looking for excess cortisol.
No, not at all.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, if there's any indication there.
Yeah, absolutely true. We can go over like how we do this.
But. So I've done these before. I've gotten these batteries of tests and this because, I'm somewhat of an influencer. What can I say? I get these free tests. So there was one panel that I got. It was my morning cortisol. I didn't sleep well the night before. And my cortisol, morning cortisol was above normal, slightly above normal. And it was like, basically like, oh, you better look into this.
Do you remember the number by any chance?
It was 22. It was something like
that. So just for everyone listening, that is normal. That's what that does is it means you don't have adrenal insufficiency.
Yeah, I don't have
adrenal insufficiency. So that's good. That's actually not above normal. It's just that we have this reference range really for kind of the adrenal insufficiency aspect of it. That's why reference ranges are a whole nother topic we should probably talk about. But
we need the people that
it's so complicated
specialize in labs because it is a whole thing. And actually, it would actually be important because of the whole COVID testing and how people don't understand probabilities and these types of things. So, but mine was the way that they said it was like, oh, you better look out for this. I'm like, no, it was normal. I didn't sleep that well. I'm sure my cortisol is a little bit elevated this morning.
Well, that's good.
But then, my nighttime salivary was not detectable, which is, it was very low.
Let's talk about why we look into that. So we really talk about this pretest probability, which we had a great discussion with our barbell medicine friends a couple of years ago on the battery of tests episode. So for people who want to talk about that, we did get into pretest probability and all that stuff. So when people are sent to me to consider, do they have Cushing's of some flavor? We look for a lot of those things that a lot of people do struggle with, obesity, facial rounding, maybe even some facial redness, hirsutism, which is facial hair in females where we don't want it, like around face, chest, abdomen, et cetera. But there are some much more specific signs and symptoms for excess cortisolism. And that would be like proximal muscle weakness. So like your hips, legs, shoulders. So I always ask people, are your legs strong? And it doesn't mean how much can you squat? It means, can you stand up? Can you walk upstairs? Or is something going wrong? Is something getting worse there? Skin thinning and bruising are some signs. We talk about these big purple growing stretch marks in, especially around the abdomen called stria. Growing fat tissue like around our clavicles and behind our neck. So we call that dorso-cervical fat padding. People call it a buffalo hump. But when you have it over your clavicles too, that's another specific sign. So those are kind of the signs of excess cortisol. Now, the degree of cortisol, though, can sort of dictate how dramatic the presentation is. So you can imagine a lot of people out there thinking, wow, I kind of have a lot of that stuff. And so, we have a lot of different genetic versions of people's response to our environment, obesity, diabetes, pregnancy, like I said, and those actually are states of somewhat elevated cortisol. And we have enzymes in our adipose tissue, by the way, called 11-beta-hydroxysteroid dehydrogenase type 1, which actually activates the inactive cortisone to cortisol. So there is a little bit of vicious cycle there. But when people have those symptoms, or in your case, the reason we looked into it to you is because you had this profound low bone density that made no sense for a young, healthy, former athlete with no broken bones. And sometimes very healthy, active people can really hold some of these Cushing symptoms at bay. So I remember when I was in fellowship, my elder mentors always kind of, they joked around about me being the guy that could maybe have Cushing's, but I work so hard on my nutrition and exercise that I might be holding a lot of it at bay. And if I start to have symptoms, people might dismiss me, you know? But so if we have some sort of high suspicion, that means it's statistically reasonable to do some sort of screening test. The best screening test for people we have a high suspicion of is that late night salivary cortisol, because in the middle of the night, when you go to sleep, your cortisol should be zero. So the late night salivary cortisol has been validated for that very well. Now, it's still not perfect, though. We still get false positives. People do it wrong. People have sleep disorders. People have shift work. Maybe that doesn't get caught. But that's how it should be. In my life, I've done some inpatient testing because we just couldn't quite figure it out and confirm it. So we had literally people have their blood drawn while they're sleeping at midnight. And there's some different ways we do that. But basically, that it really should be essentially zero. Your cortisol should be zero while you're sleeping in the middle of the night. If it's not, that means something's wrong with that diurnal pattern. And we got to look a little bit deeper. A good test that we use for people who are at least not on medications that can cause cortisol binding globulin, like birth control. So you can imagine a lot of people on birth control increase these binding proteins. So then their morning cortisols are always going to be pretty elevated as long as they don't have adrenal insufficiency. But for this test, we do a 1 milligram dexamethasone, which is a high potency, long-acting steroid that they take at bedtime. And then we check the morning cortisol. Because like you said, it should be high. That's what it's supposed to happen. But if you take a different type of steroid, that should tell your hypothalamus and your pituitary and your adrenal glands that they don't have to work overnight, then the cortisol when you wake up at that point should be very low. It should be well under, if you look at the units we use, but 1.8 is the number. And really, you know, if you ask the adrenal researchers and experts, it really should be even lower than that. We use that test a lot when people have adrenal nodules that are incidental. That threshold has gone down over the years because we are starting to learn that a lot of these little adrenal nodules that really don't seem to look like they're doing too much, they can cause some problems over time, like, you know, diabetes, osteoporosis, earlier death, et cetera, like that. So, and then another one that is used historically, but really isn't that great, is the 24-hour urine-free cortisol. So we use it. It actually isn't too great. Not that anybody listening to this necessarily cares other than maybe endocrinologists and primary care docs. But and then once we confirm, and we have to do this multiple times because this diagnosis is really hard to make because there's so many false positives and negatives. We don't want to miss it, but we also don't want to over-diagnose it. And that's the problem with those batteries of tests. It leads people down these rabbit holes that are completely unnecessary. But if we confirm that, hey, somebody has excess cortisol somehow from inside their body, and it's not that somebody's given them a bunch of cortisol, then we got to figure out, is it their pituitary or is it their adrenal gland or glands? Because there are some rare syndromes where it's both of them. Very rarely we can have metastatic cancers that do it, but that usually just causes complete wasting away. People just kind of waste away with that level of excess cortisol. And the way we do that, we use that pituitary adrenocorticotropic hormone, that cortisol stimulating hormone. If it's low, and if one of the other adrenal hormones that's under the influence of that hormone called DHEA, that's kind of one of those androgen male type hormones, is low, then that means it's coming from one of the adrenal glands. Obviously, if the ACTH, that adrenocorticotropic hormone, is high, then it's probably coming from the pituitary. And then we get into pituitary MRIs, and then we can debate at what size we need to do some other special testing. That's so beyond the scope of what people care about in this. But that's how we do it.
Yeah, I think the gist for people out there, don't buy supplements that modulate your cortisol levels. If you're going to start messing around testing your cortisol for some reason, please work with an endocrinologist or another doctor like such as myself that at least understands when these things should be indicated to start things off. Don't not exercise because some influencer online said it increases your cortisol. That's not a reason to. The reason not to do high intensity interval training would be like, hey, maybe your joints and things aren't ready for that type of aggressive.
Yeah, totally different.
It's like, just
don't worry about the whatever. Cortisol.
There are other reasons behind cortisol that just doesn't even make any sense. Signs and symptoms go by what my brother had mentioned before. If you think you have some indication, again, I've checked it on, I see primarily obesity patients, and we, you know, if there's signs and symptoms, I test for it. I screen for it.
But it's reasonable. And I'll tell you what, there are some emerging data. Like I said, these small adrenal nodules that are just barely cooking a little too much. Maybe we are going to end up screening more people with obesity and diabetes. We should probably screen more people who are really struggling to control their sugars despite good diet, exercise, medications, and insulin, because maybe there may be a much higher prevalence of these than we realize in that group. So we're probably going to start testing them more. And then, of course, the other thing is, I think you were the first one to maybe tell me that people who were promoting the whole adrenal fatigue thing were trying to sell licorice. Is that right?
Yes.
Because a lot of people take licorice, and please don't do that.
I'll
talk about why, but don't do that.
Well, because it has to do with the enzyme that it actually helps block the enzyme that converts to cortisone.
The other one that I mentioned for that's in adipose tissue. So 11-beta-hydroxysteroid dehydrogenase 2 is our enzyme that converts cortisol to the inactive cortisone. That enzyme is inhibited by real licorice. And so what it does is it tricks the kidneys into thinking all that cortisol that we have around is actually that aldosterone, that other adrenal hormone I talked about. That's our blood pressure hormone. And then that screws up cause you to have high blood pressure, screw up your potassium and sodium a little bit. It's bad for electrolytes. It can be pretty dangerous, actually.
Well, the reason I had a cool case in residency where I think it ended up being, is it Gittleman's?
The kidney.
But we actually screened for, because it can look similar to somebody ingesting too much licorice.
Yep.
And I did a case presentation all about that. And it's actually a really cool mechanism because it's like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are some quacks out there being like, no, you need to take this in order to increase your own cortisol. It's just because they're diagnosing off of fake tests. That people's cortisol are too low based on these diurnal salivary cortisol.
Or too high. Oh my God. They just
wasn't indicated.
All different
so
things.
Anyway, don't be messing around with licorice. Yeah.
Real adrenal insufficiency, by the way, if your adrenal glands themselves fail from an autoimmune disease or hemorrhage or infection or something, you will have very dramatic fatigue, weight loss. Your skin will get really dark. You'll have electrolyte issues. You might, if you have, you know, you might have low blood sugars actually from that. And then, you know, if you have adrenal insufficiency from your pituitary, it's a little bit less dramatic. You don't get the tanning of the skin. The weight isn't as much affected, but people still feel like lightheaded and fatigued and stuff like that. So those are the reasons we look into adrenal insufficiency. So yeah, don't listen to the quacks. Don't get this diagnosed by integrative, functional, alternative physicians. Talk to your primary care doctor if you have actual concerns. They'll refer you to an endocrinologist if we actually have to look into this. Don't avoid exercise. Sure, avoid overtraining, but there's a lot of reasons to do that. But I don't have a lot of people who are overtraining.
No, that was like us in college.
Yeah, and even then we tried very hard not to overtrain.
Division one. College athletes and in wrestling, not just like anything. It was intense.
I'm sure my cortisol was through the roof while my testosterone was in the tank when I was at 4% body fat and miserable.
Yeah.
God. Don't take licorice.
Until you ate 20 bowls of crackling oat bran.
with I don't know if we should say it was with your dining card at Case.
What are they gonna do?
What are they gonna do? I don't know. Not let me go and work out there anymore because I just
Case Hall. But it was Case Hall. It wasn't even the Duffy Doherty.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Actually, I have a neighbor that was at Case Hall when I was there. It's kind of funny. So anyway, all right. If you know anybody that's getting duped by these cortisol, and I can't even believe they're cortisol influencers, but
that's too bad.
Whatever. It's terrible. And the thing is, the reason it's easy to get duped is because it sounds right. It's like, okay, yeah, cortisol. You could start making the case that like, yeah, too much cortisol cause, you know, with Cushingoid symptoms. Yeah. And so you got these mild subclinical increases and then you want to decrease them and they can give you all their their supplements and their meal plan and their exercise plan. I understand why, but absolutely do not listen to these freaking quacks.
Yeah. It does sound good. I mean, I used to joke around about how my cortisol was up when I was working in the hospital during residency in the middle of the night, and then I found donuts and I couldn't stop but eat them.
Yeah,
because mine was like, oh, my cortisol's too high. I gotta eat.
Yeah, no, I used to eat Rice Krispies. When I was doing night shifts, because I'd start off the night shift week eating chicken breast, vegetables, whatever. And 3 days in, I was like, this does not sound appealing. I want those Rice Krispies. Yeah, I can't. It was the only thing I could satisfy. It was amazing. Yeah. So anyway, all right, here's our outro. Send this to a friend and whoever else that's debating on doing the whole cortisol.
Don't buy supplements.
Yeah, don't get batteries of tests from those other quacks. Oh, dear Lord.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities.